This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
There's a meeting about the European debt crisis today.
But it's not in Brussels or Athens. It's in Washington.
From APM, American Public Media, in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. Today is Tuesday, October 25th.
Well, coming up, how's the housing market? Depends on where you live.
A year and a half after the Gulf oil spill, BP appears to be back in the black.
And one dentist wants to pay kids to have a sugar-free Halloween.
Why do they always try to take the fun out of Halloween? Those stories ahead on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Well, European leaders are expected to meet tomorrow in Brussels. However, it's doubtful they're going to come up with any kind of plan concerning the European debt crisis. They're trying, of course, to restructure Greece's debts and replenish the EU's bailout fund. And all this week we've been talking about why Greece, which is the epicenter of the debt crisis, is such a threat to the American economy, why we should care about what's going on over there. Well, today, a House Financial Services subcommittee is going to tap into that question, and Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer is with us now from Washington with the latest on that story. Good morning, Nancy.
Morning, Steve.
What kind of effects might we see here in the U.S.?
Well, the big concern is how the U.S. would be affected if Europe slides into a recession. We would export less to Europe as Europeans cut back on their spending. Steve, if you think about Boeing, Europe is one of its biggest markets. I talked this morning about this with Tim Loinig. He's an economist at the London School of Economics. And he says we would also see fewer European tourists coming to the U.S.
If you're starting in Europe, America is a relatively expensive destination. If people are not confident about the future, they won't go on expensive holidays. They'll go camping around the corner instead.
And Steve, Europeans would also be reluctant to travel if the euro fell more against the dollar.
What are the chances, Nancy, of a recession in Europe?
Well, some of the economists testifying at today's hearing have released prepared remarks of what they're going to say today. And one of them says there's a 1 in 4 chance of a European recession. So it's definitely, it's not definitely going to happen, but that's a pretty significant chance.
Yeah. How would U.S. banks be affected by a slowdown or some sort of recession in Europe?
Well, U.S. banks don't hold a lot of debt from some of the more troubled countries in Europe, like Greece and Spain. But, we do, of course, have a global financial system. And Loinig told me that the banking system is a lot like a big, not very fun game of dominoes. And banks around the world borrow money from each other. Normally, a bank can borrow money for a few days. It's no big deal. But if a bank appears to be on the brink of trouble, other banks just won't lend to it. And if banks stop lending to each other, more banks get in trouble, like a virus, like dominoes. And Loinig says this happened in the 1920s, and it happened at the beginning of the financial crisis in the U.S. when Lehman Brothers failed.
Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer. Nancy, thanks.
Thanks.
Also on Capitol Hill today, a House committee is looking into how a change in the student loan program is working out. Student loan debt is expected to hit $1 trillion this year, and the biggest provider of those loans by far is the federal government. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
As part of last year's student aid reforms, private banks can no longer offer federal student loans. They used to get big subsidies for doing so. Now the federal government makes all the loans directly. Christine Lindstrom with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group says the bulk of the savings went to shore up the Pell Grant program for low-income students.
things are so much better in the college affordability world now that we have that money actually going to students.
There have been some complaints, though. Justin Drager with the National Association of Student Financial Aid Administrators says overall the transition has been successful. But he says some schools miss the financial literacy and debt counseling programs private companies used to provide.
We're working with the Department of Education right now to fill that gap, but schools have said that there's a noticeable absence of some of those materials that they relied heavily on in the past.
Materials that may be more important than ever with student loan defaults on the rise. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
We got a mixed picture on home prices today from the closely watched S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index. It says home prices rose in half of the 20 cities in the survey.
But they were down more than 3% in the month of August when you look at all 20 together. Mm. Let's talk with Julie Niemann now, analyst with Smith Moore & Company. She's with us from St. Louis. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Julie, let's start with the good. The biggest price increases came in Detroit, Chicago, and D.C. What's the story?
Well, it really is a split housing market. We've stabilized. In fact, we're even seeing a little bit of rising employment in some of these cities. For example, Washington, D.C., well, we know that. The federal government is always growing.
Yeah.
So that's always the mecca for housing there. But if you take a look at Chicago, for example, the 18 to 34-year-old population, and there are about 1.5 million of these people living at home, are moving out. They're going to where the jobs actually are. And in Chicago, you have a core that is growing because you have finance in there, trading, agriculture. But the suburbs, you still have very high unemployment. That part isn't growing. So you really have kind of a reverse donut hole here.
And what about, Julie, what about the bad here? The biggest declines came in L.A. and Atlanta. What's going on there?
Well, in Los Angeles, some of it is technology, too, but it was very, very high prices from which they've been coming off. So you still have way high prices, typical of the Sand States, still hitting L.A. When you take a look at some of the other cities like Detroit, housing prices are the price of a really good New York dinner. So that's going up. It doesn't really mean anything. So it's very split in terms of where the new jobs are coming, and that's where you can see the stabilization first. But the core cities that have sand problems, Phoenix, Miami,
yeah.
Los Angeles, are still going to have those way overpriced houses still that have to be worked off.
Julie Niemann, analyst with Smith Moore & Company, thanks as always.
You bet.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
President Obama travels to Colorado today, campaigning for his jobs bill and for re-election. The president's taken a lot of flack on his health care law lately from potential challengers on the GOP side, a law that's helped drive some big hospital mergers across the country. From Colorado Public Radio, Eric Whitney reports.
This year is on track to be the biggest ever for hospital mergers and acquisitions nationwide. In Denver, hospital giant HCA just bought out its junior partner in a $1.5 billion transaction. Two more deals involving at least six more hospitals statewide are in the works. Stephen Summer is head of the Colorado Hospital Association. He says the mergers should mean better, cheaper care for patients.
If you can consolidate and get economies of scale, it's shown to be much more effective.
Translation? It's cheaper for one administration to run several hospitals than them all running themselves. The federal health reform law also aims to squeeze more efficiency. It changes the way hospitals and doctors get paid. Its goal is to keep people healthy and only do procedures that are absolutely necessary instead of maximizing the number of tests. Again, Stephen Summer.
I think we're going to see that if the payment system that's in the Affordable Care Act is allowed to be implemented.
The Congressional Supercommittee is looking at chopping some of the health care law's payment incentives. Then there's the expected Supreme Court case on the law's constitutionality. Experts say those uncertainties are actually slowing the hospital merger trend. In Denver, I'm Eric Whitney for Marketplace.
Well, the president spent a little time in Los Angeles yesterday, and he made a quick stop at Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles for a snack before getting...
Which, by the way, is an L.A. institution.
Indeed, yes. He went there just before getting whisked off to a fundraising dinner where plates cost a bit more than the $8.90 that he spent on his
country boy.
Yeah, right, exactly. This is not the first great institution of a restaurant that President Obama has stopped at, and we wanted to ask about the impact that his visits have on local businesses.
In today's Midday Extra, we ask why people care what the president eats. And Perry Smith is managing partner at Ted's Bulletin in Washington, which is another restaurant, a place where the president has been spotted before. Hi, Perry.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing well. And tell us about when President Obama came to your place.
Well, he actually came in the actual date was August 10th. Here in the heat of the Washington summer, but it was more of a campaign stop. We got word a few days before that someone important was coming in. We didn't know.
They didn't tell you it was Obama.
Right, they didn't tell us exactly who it was, but after we saw a few of the guys in dark sunglasses, we kind of figured it out. 3 days of security checks, that type of thing. On the day of the visit, they actually shut the entire street down, although it was very crowded around the perimeter. The word had started to get out. He came in, and he had a little visit. It was about a couple of hours. He had a little visit with some of his community organizers that had come into town. Came in the restaurant. It was very, very exciting for us. He said hi to everybody. He's very authoritative. Walked over and sat down and immediately was ready to place his order. Had a one of our famous cheeseburgers and a side salad, order of fries, and sat there for about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and talked to his organizers. And then in the end, he shook hands with all of us. We had a great picture, and off he went.
And is this the kind of thing where after he orders that cheeseburger that you then name it the Obama burger or something like that?
Well, we haven't done that, but I can tell you that immediately after he left, we had calls from people because it had gotten out on social media. Had calls for people from people asking, where did he sit? And he had sat on one of our banquettes, and so they said, we want to sit in the Obama bench. And they named it for us. And we said, okay, well, I guess that has become the name.
Do you have like a little placard nearby that says this is the Obama bench?
We had to go there. We're actually right now finishing a very, very nice brass type plaque that we're gonna place right over that because we're still getting calls. I think, you know, when the news got out, it sits out there for a long, long time, and people might type in whatever the keywords they are to come to a diner or Ted's Bulletin or whatever it might be, and immediately you come up with an association with Obama. So it really, really has been good for us.
Well, what has it done to business? Have you been able to see a marked increase in your customers?
The answer is yes, because there's no difference between – we're here in Washington on Capitol Hill, and it's a nice street, a nice community on Capitol Hill with a lot of local businesses and people know each other. But the reality is there's no difference between what happened to us and what might happen out there in middle America. It's great. The chance of the president actually coming to visit our 75-seat restaurant, it was an amazing experience for us.
Why do people, Perry, care – where the president eats? I mean, is it just because it's the president? I mean, it could have been George Bush, could have been Clinton, Reagan, whomever. Or is Obama a special case? Does he eat out more often? Does he do a lot of this?
The word that we were getting is that he actually has his staff members who live around and about D.C. He asks them. He says, "Where can I go? What's the next place? What have you guys heard about?" And they told us that he quizzed them quite a bit on where should he go on Capitol Hill that's a little closer to the White House, and Ted's Bulletin had come up. And personally, I think that. What's interesting about him is that you guys mentioned chicken and waffles. Yeah. He seems to like to eat American food. He has a burger at Ted's with cheddar cheese on it and a side salad. That's quintessentially American food. And you hear about him going in Washington, eating burgers elsewhere. And so he eats like I like to eat.
You know, it's interesting because when he was running for office, everyone was talking about how he was the arugula president and he wasn't interested in that stuff. He would go to these donut shops and stuff in Pennsylvania and he wouldn't want to order any of the unhealthy stuff. And I think since he's become president, he's really gotten a taste for burgers and waffles and fries.
Is that what it is?
Pizza.
He was never eating burgers before that. Jeremy's theory this morning. The arugula president. I like that.
Well, Perry Smith, good luck. And we hope to come by and have a burger one day.
Thank you.
Perry Smith, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
Well, some earnings news today. Delta Airlines says it made more than $500 million last quarter. That fell short of expectations. But, Steve, it's interesting to see the difference between these airlines because it was just, what, a week ago that American Airlines reported a big loss.
A big loss, yeah. But a lot of the other airlines are doing okay. Not great, not fanfare and fireworks, but okay. Mm-hmm. Package courier UPS reported higher profit and higher revenue today as well. And Netflix shares have been down anywhere from 15 to 25%.
They were down 37% at the open this morning after the company said yesterday that it lost 800,000 customers in the last 3 months. Of course, Netflix tried and failed to spin off its DVD by mail business and force customers to stream video online only. For more, let's bring in Marketplace Tech Report host John Moe. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, John, the problems with Netflix we've talked about, they've been widely known. Why this sudden drop in confidence overnight?
Well, I mean, Netflix actually had a nice increase in revenue in these results, but it's that drop in subscription that freaked out investors. And when you're freaked out or upset, Netflix is an easy service to cancel. I mean, if you're mad at Bank of America, leaving takes a long time and a lot of hassle. So as people got mad about the pricing changes and the split and the whole Quickster debacle, they could just ditch. And, you know, that means also, of course, that people could later come back just as easily.
Well, who benefits from a weaker Netflix? Are people going back to cable? Are they going to Hulu Plus and places like that?
Well, the stock's weak, but the company still has almost 24 million subscribers, and it just expanded to England. Hulu Plus hit 1 million subscribers recently, earlier than expected. But Hulu Plus and Netflix aren't really an either-or proposition. One has more recent shows. One has a bigger catalog. They're only $8 a month each. And I think most people kept cable even with Netflix, so they probably never left. And as for all the other competitors, this shows it's still an open market. If you can bring the best selection and low prices and make it easy and not give people migraines, you'll get customers.
John Moe, host of the Marketplace Tech Report, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Later today, John and Jeremy, we're going to hear from eTailorAmazon.com. The company may have started as an online bookstore, but as Marketplace's Jennifer Collins reports, it's grown into so much more.
Amazon's Kindle Fire has taken some jabs since the tablet was announced last month. This was Saturday Night Live's take on the iPad competitor.
It's expected to sell well among parents who always buy the wrong thing.
Analyst Frederick Moran of the Benchmark Company says Kindle accounts for only about 5% of Amazon's revenue. About 60% comes from retail items like clothes, kitchen appliances, and flat-screen TVs.
Electronics products are the single biggest driver of Amazon's revenue creation.
As retailers head into the holiday season, Roger Kay of Endpoint Technologies says things may not be great for brick-and-mortar chains, but
what joy there is this season is likely to go to Amazon and a couple of other companies.
Amazon brings in close to 40% of its revenue in the last 3 months of the year, so analysts will be watching closely to see how much joy there'll be. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
A dentist, Jeremy, in Mansfield, Ohio, wants to buy the sweet right out of Halloween, offering to buy trick-or-treat candy back from kids at $1 a pound up to 5 pounds. Yeah, so kids can make $5 or less. No surprise, of course, that a dentist wants kids to avoid the sweets. I'm just curious what he's going to do with all that candy. Seriously, I'd like to know what he's going to do with that
candy.
Maybe
he's going to sell it back to the stores for a profit.
The address here, we're on Figueroa Street in downtown L.A.
Steve, I just gave you a piece of candy.
I'd like some more.
And now the Marketplace Global Perspective. We'll start with a number, $4.9 billion. That's what British oil giant BP made in profit last quarter. That's more than double what it made in the same quarter last year. The company, of course, shares blame for the Gulf of Mexico oil spill, the biggest oil spill in U.S. history. But it says now it has reached a turning point. Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports from London.
BP's third quarter profits have improved for two main reasons. Last year, in the same period, the company was writing off huge sums of money to pay for the Gulf of Mexico spill. So this year, its figures look much better in comparison. And then there's the price of oil. It's gone up almost 50% over the past 12 months, giving BP a major boost. Nick McGregor is an oil analyst with stockbrokers Redmayne Bentley.
The sheer cash generation capability of the oil majors when oil prices are high is phenomenal and easily enough to cover incidents such as those that BP have faced.
The company has written off $41 billion to pay for the disaster, and that includes an extra $600 million in legal fees. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
News Corp released results of its shareholder votes yesterday and said a third of ballots cast went against Rupert Murdoch's two sons, James and Lachlan, for the company's board. Now, News Corp has been embroiled in that phone hacking scandal in the UK, and shareholders were sending a message that they don't want Murdoch in charge once Dad retires. The California Retirement Fund used its 7 million News Corp shares to send that message.
These are the winds of change, and that rejuvenation on the board needs to happen. It's begun. And this is a strong signal to those directors who are pushing for that change that really they have the majority of the capital behind them in what they're trying to do.
CalPERS portfolio manager Ann Simpson on the BBC Today.
Well, the UK has the lowest proportion, Steve, of female engineers in Europe. Mm. The engineering industry there is worried the imbalance will affect their competitiveness for years to come. So industry bosses are teaming up with schools across the UK today to launch a campaign encouraging more young women to go into manufacturing and engineering. From London, here's the BBC's Kate McGough.
The campaign is called Talent 2030, and it wants little girls in the UK to dream a little less about a career in the spotlight and a little more about a career building spotlights, or bridges, or spaceships. Jane Wernick is a structural engineer who worked on London's iconic observational wheel, the London Eye. She's a supporter of the campaign and says half the problem is that girls have too narrow an idea of what an engineer actually does.
They think that the person who mends your washing machine is an engineer, or they think about hard hats and grease and mud, and they don't realise that actually it just touches every aspect of our physical world.
The campaign will be working with schools to encourage girls to choose subjects like physics and math, and to get young girls to think of a job in engineering as creative and collaborative. 2030 is the year when girls born today will be heading to college. So Talent 2030 is hoping by then there will be a thriving engineering sector for today's baby girls to step into. In London, I'm the BBC's Kate McGough for Marketplace.
Back now talking about the European debt crisis. There's a big plan to fix it, of course, or hopefully fix it at some point. A meeting scheduled tomorrow may or may not happen. And reports say the deal could force the holders of Greek debt to accept bigger losses. Well, as I mentioned earlier in the program, we're putting a special focus on the threat Greece poses to the global economy. And this morning, Marketplace's Eve Tro now has the story of one California company that has a clear connection to Greece.
When you see Athens police holding back rioting Greeks, they carry thick, clear pieces of plastic. Riot control body shields.
They're held up in front of you like this.
That's Roy Paulson. He knows how to hold one because his company makes them.
And of course, we make the handles, straps, and all of the parts. We like to make everything ourselves.
Paulson Manufacturing makes and ships safety gear around the world from its California headquarters. The company started in the 1940s with a toy.
And it was called the Tom Corbett Space Cadet Goggle. It was sold on a Kellogg's Corn Flakes box for 35 cents.
Now it's known for top-quality eye and face protection, used by the U.S. and international military and police. Paulson has sold to Greece for years.
We were able to see very early that they were going to have problems, long before it was in the news, because the government was already in anticipation and planning to place large orders for equipment.
Large orders worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. But in the export business, you don't ship until you know you'll get paid. Last year, Paulson's Greek private distributor didn't know if he'd get paid by the Greek government. So the riot gear sat in the California warehouse, and Paulson watched the headlines.
We heard that the EU was going to support Greece, and even before we received the money, we went ahead and made the ocean shipments because we knew that the money would then be transferred.
It was the next day. I ask Paulson if he's skittish about selling to Greece now. He says no. Even if the government is in trouble, the banks seem to be okay.
I'm shipping containers of product to my warehouse in Germany in advance of even receiving orders because I'm so confident of the sales of my products into the European marketplace.
He's confident not only of the demand for more police and riot gear across Europe, but of his trading partners' ability to pay for it. I'm Eve Troe for Marketplace.
And finally, to Boca Raton, Florida, Steve, where a thief used a woman's credit card to charge up more than $700 at a Burger King.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, the weird part is this. The thief did not do all of that spending at once.
Well, how much are you going to get?
I guess that's right. It would seem weird enough to do a $700 purchase all at once. But according to the South Florida Sun Sentinel, he or she went back to the same Burger King day after day for 2 months.
Oh my gosh.
Using this credit card. On one day, made 5 transactions. I just hope, for the thief's sake, that one of those was a salad.
I hope so, too, with some light dressing.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Steve Chiatakis. Enjoy your Tuesday. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.